Welcome to Orchestrated, a Musio podcast where we discuss the past, present, and future of music creation to explore exactly what it means to be a musician in the modern era. I'm Chris Hazel, and this week on the pod, we're kind of branching out a little bit. So far, we've kind of stuck to the corner of music that we know, and we've talked about navigating a career in the world of music for television, movies, and video games, and we've talked to some of the industry's leading creators. But that's only one very specific avenue toward a career in music. And the truth is, these days there are so many ways for a musician to build a sustainable creative life, many of which require nothing more than some gear, curiosity, skills, and the internet. So on today's episode, we're diving into one of the top platforms for music creators, YouTube. Hundreds of millions of people with every interest you could imagine visit YouTube every day. And if you're a music creator looking for your audience, there's almost no better place to find them. But as with anything else, the platform comes with its own challenges, its own strategies, and its own potential pitfalls. So to guide us through approaching YouTube with the right mindset, we're joined by electronic music producer and YouTube creator, Tatro. Since around 2014, Tatro has been using YouTube as the main platform to launch his music career. And in that time, he's developed a large and highly engaged musical community, a life sustained by his creativity, and most importantly, a unique and incredibly applicable perspective on what it means to be a music creator in today's increasingly online world. And honestly, even though his insights are in the context of YouTube content creation, they're pretty universally valuable to just about any creative in any medium on any trajectory. So I'm really excited for you guys to listen. Real quick before we jump in, if you have any questions, comments, feedback, or you just want to drop us a line, you can email us at orchestrated@musio.com. If you're a music creator and you're looking for amazing sounds, head over to musio.com to get a huge collection of some of the world's best virtual instruments, completely free for 30 days. And lastly, if you like this conversation and you want to hear more like it, please don't forget to rate, review, like, subscribe, share, follow, you know, all of that stuff. We really enjoy being able to share these valuable conversations with music creators like you. And the more positive feedback the old algorithm gets, the more music creators it'll share the pod with. So, without further delay, let's talk YouTube music creation with Tatro.
Is my mic level okay and everything?
Yeah, everything perfect. Sounds good.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
I'm a little concerned about mine because my mic is at a weird angle because my mic stand broke, and so it's taped, literally taped together. So I think this is just a sign that I need to get an SM7B.
I think so. Yes, we'll pretend you have one. We won't tell
anybody.
There
we go. Yeah, it's off camera, so you know, yeah. It's okay.
He's got the 7B.
And he's using a windscreen for it.
Yeah. Exactly. Double protection.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm stoked for this.
One of the reasons why we wanted to have you on is because I feel like we share a common goal, right? We want to like inspire music creators and give them information and tools and things like that to sort of help them navigate their creative vision. It used to be that, you know, the options for musicians were pretty limited, right? Like you had a handful of routes that you could take in terms of having a music career. You could go to school and learn that way, or you could, you know, be a session player, or you could do the artist thing and grind it out and like hope something happens. But in today's like online world, there are so many more options out there that I think aren't necessarily maybe the most obvious ones that come to mind when someone starts out.
For sure.
Streaming platforms and social media and live streaming, there are just so many routes that a musician can take in terms of making a living.
Absolutely. It's like I say, it's like one of the best times to be alive to be an artist. Of course, with all of this like added opportunity and added ways of getting your stuff out there or making it as an artist, there come more ways of exploitation or being able to get exploited as an artist. But there are definitely so many more pathways for an artist today to like, not like we say make a living, but just sustain the work, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of those is one of those main ways is YouTube.
For sure.
Right. So
definitely.
that's why we wanted to bring you in, because you've been able to build a community and a career using that platform. I mean, I think I checked it out. You have 320,000 subscribers.
on YouTube. Yeah, I don't look at that number anymore. That's like a subscribers is like such a vanity metric.
Sure.
I care about the people who are like coming back to every video and like cheering me on during a live stream or whatever. So I know everybody sees those big numbers and they think like, oh, that means something. But in reality, like it doesn't change. Like we know how algorithms work. Doesn't matter if I have 300,000 or a million subscribers, the algorithm's going to choose to show my videos to however many people it decides to show them to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I've been doing this for a long time. So over the course of that journey, made different genres of videos and, you know, shared my work as an artist, but also shared the ways I make the work as an artist. You know, I want to teach as well. So it's been a great platform to be on. And I do feel like I want to continuously scream about it to every artist or every person who's just starting, like, hey, like you're going to be making stuff, just document the journey, share what you learn, share it on YouTube, because like there's a clear pathway for monetization, like a way to actually sustain your work if you grow a decent sized community. So it's really worked out. It's taken many different shapes and forms over the past few years, but I've been doing it for a while, so I guess that says something about the platform.
Well, I want to know more about that journey for you. So like how long have you been doing YouTube, just to kick it off?
That's a good question. I would say it's hard to say like when I started, because I mean, YouTube, you guys probably remember back in the day, you just used to upload stuff to YouTube. It wasn't this like thing where people went for content every single day. It was more like a video hosting site or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, by the time I was finishing college, I was a music major in college, and I had been doing these electronic music performances with different MIDI controllers and Ableton Live. And my senior recital had this performance of a track called Rain, but the video of my actual recital didn't come out that great. So I went back home after that and shot a video of doing the same performance again, and I uploaded that to YouTube, and that was my first YouTube video on the Tetro channel in 2014, I think. I think it was like just after graduation. So like it just became like a repository for performances for a little bit. I crafted some more performances, and I would post them. And then I kind of left it alone for a bit. I kind of got into my teaching career, like teaching as a music director in different nonprofits and after school programs. And then at some point during that journey, I was working with all these young people who were like making great music, like teens that are just like phenomenally talented. And we had like studios that they could make their own music in. And that was like super inspiring for me. And I was like, man, I need to get back on my artist stuff. Like I need to like make sure I have my own pathway for, you know, a creative outlet. So I went back to the YouTube channel and I realized that, yes, I could keep making performances. I definitely want to do that. But a lot of people are asking me questions, like actually asking me, like, how did you do this? What gear did you use? How did you route it all? That kind of thing. So that kind of probably in 2016, like, is when I started like doing YouTube, quote unquote. That's when I started, you know, not just doing the performances, but also doing the tutorials, experimenting with live streaming, all those things. And it's always been a blend of, I want to share my work, I want to share like my performances, my music, etc. And then I also want to answer all the questions. I want to share with you how I did this, to just make it easier for people, because it used to be super frustrating. You would see these amazing performances online and you'd have no idea how to accomplish it unless you were like pausing and then reverse engineering. Oh, they showed the laptop screen for like a second. Pause, zoom in, super blurry. That kind of vibe. So that was always a thorn in my side when I was trying to learn these things. So I just always want to be sharing what I know.
What was that like for you? Because I remember, I can relate to that entire trajectory in so many ways, right? Like YouTube for me for like 10 years was just a repository for like performances or music videos or things like that. What was it like for you to make that shift in your mind to being like, okay, I'm going to do the YouTube thing? And what were some of the challenges that you encountered when trying to make that shift?
I think the thing that I realized was, well, look, anybody can upload stuff to the internet. Like anybody can make a SoundCloud account. Anybody can, you know, upload a video to YouTube. The difference that I started to see was super community driven stuff. And then I would see returning names, like people returning to my channel you know, coming back after watching some videos, and like I started to realize, oh, there's like a bit of a community forming here. So I thought that that was way more powerful, you know, as an artist, when I thought about what I enjoyed doing. The main thing, even still today, that I enjoy doing as an artist is making the music, like the literal process of making the music.
Yeah.
And I think so far, if we want to talk about a time to be alive as an artist, I can't think of another time in history where that part of the creative process was like monetizable. You know, like you're right, either like making the track to sell or to, you know, put out and, you know, market around. And then you're either going out and touring, which obviously like generates revenue. You're selling merch, etc. Like live performance, even though I love filming live performances, I don't always love like going out and performing live. But if I can do it from the comfort of my own home and make a video out of it, that sort of thing, it's really cool. So I was just trying to align with like, hey, if I want to be this independent artist and this is the thing that I really, really enjoy, then YouTube's the perfect spot for it. I can form community around what I'm doing. I never have to leave my house if I don't want to. And I can actually monetize the part of the process that I love. Like the, let me show you how I'm making this track. Let me document the process of making this track. At the end of the day, if I finish a track and I like it, great. I'll put it out. I hope other people enjoy it. I hope the audience engages with it. But like right now, actually today, I just released a single. And then next month, I will release an album. And I got to say that this process of releasing this stuff is my least favorite part of the process. It's such a different thing. Like it's an analytical process. It's a very like fine detail oriented process.
Yeah.
And of course it's like, it's part of being an artist. Like you want to finish the work. You want to give it to the audience so they can complete the work, but it's nowhere near the same as the creative flow and the passion that I feel when I'm just sitting down making new stuff.
That brings up a really interesting point about how the process, showing the process of creating music and having YouTube be like the kind of the first way that that was really done for the masses. In order to, prior to that, if you wanted to see how that sausage was being made, you had to have a connection at a studio and get them to let you into a recording session or a production session. And before that, it was if you wanted to hear an orchestra rehearsing or a band rehearsing, you had to know someone in the band and go and sit in and listen to the jam session. And for the longest time, the commodity of the product that was music was such a mystery to people. Yes. The same way that a lot of like paintings and films and other pieces of art that are not shown until they are published, and you don't really get that opportunity to see what the creative process was like. And so it became this out of reach thing. And I think one of the reasons that the number of music creators and other creative individuals in the world is growing. Well, first of all, I think everyone's creative. I think it came, you know, your creativity came free with your humanity, but it also is something that more and more people are identifying their need to do stuff creatively. And they're seeing more and more, oh, this is possible. I can go and I can learn how to do this, whether it's woodworking and building your own tables or making electronic music or composing for video games or learning how to play your favorite songs on piano, all these
just for fun,
just to go to an open mic night or to sit in your room and be the only one who ever knows about it.
My father has been teaching himself how to play piano for the past few years, and it's just like, it's purely a hobby for him, purely just a thing he can do on his own. And I think part of the reason he's able to do that is he's able to, you know, engage on the internet. I don't even know who he watches or like where he gets most of the stuff. But yeah, exactly what you said. Like arts, they can have a mystification about them. And that's okay if you purely want to be a consumer of the art and you don't care how the sausage is made and you just want to enjoy it. Of course, I think there's levels of, well, sometimes my brain is like constantly trying to deconstruct like everything that I'm consuming, but not everybody has that brain. So it's okay for that mystery to be there. But just like you said, demystifying it for the people who think, huh, I want to do that. Like we live in a time now where like I took up painting as a hobby, like watercolor painting, and I can watch so many classes online for free and like get to be like a pretty moderate amateur at painting. Like that's awesome. So on the flip side of that, if you're an artist out there, I think just sharing what you know with people is a, it makes our world better. I say more artists, better world. So yeah. I could be an artist that just like hides everything and only releases the music and doesn't talk about, you know, tries to gatekeep. And I really want to combat against that though. I think like we shouldn't be gatekeeping. We should be sharing. Like there's young people out there. There's older people out there who want to be able to do things and enrich their lives in some form of right. art. And, you know, us as artists, let's make it easy for people to do that.
Yeah. Well, and it's also the piece about too, when you see the finished product, when that's all you see, you don't understand the right. the work and the years of exploration that goes into that finished product, right? And so like, you know, yes, people can look up and see how to do things, but they also get an understanding of the fact that like, if this is something that you want to do, it's something this that you're going to put time into.
Yes.
Yeah. And I feel like it's really easy for people to get discouraged if they're just seeing like the best of your work that you have to
totally.
Offer.
And you get people believing that, oh, these artists only exist because they have a natural gift, right?
Yeah,
right.
Like, exactly.
Like that's especially true in the US, like American Idol. Like that's the whole thing. It's like, oh, this person was just singing on the subway and they had such a beautiful voice. They got discovered. And you know, like that's the narrative that we write a lot around a lot of the artists that are popular, especially in the West. And I feel like I'm completely not a naturally talented, gifted person. And yeah. I feel like there's a lot of work that goes into this. And I think yep. most of the artists that I know, of course, I think that they're very talented, but I also know how hard they work and like how much time and effort and practice they put into what they do. And I hope that, you know, from the indie artist perspective, I think we're constantly, a lot of independent artists are constantly sharing the reality of what it is like. But I hope that carries through to more of the mainstream culture as well, because
yeah.
We want to see that more authentic journey, and it's better for people to see that more authentic journey.
Yeah.
It's better in a lot of ways. And I, you know, soapbox moment, I think it's an oversold dream that people yeah. get discovered by the people who are in charge, who sit yep. in the boardrooms, who write those multi-million dollar contracts. It's not nearly as common as people are led to believe. It always involves lots more connections that existed before that. You know, if you became a yep. if you became a breakout teen idol superstar, it's because you had parents who
your
knew
parents
people,
knew
you know?
Someone. Yes, like that's exactly.
You know, there's a, and I'm not throwing shade about that. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. It's great to have those connections, but to foster the idea that anyone can do that specifically is right. irresponsible, because it is much more attainable to spend the time and learn to do these things on your own. And it's much more enjoyable. And that's really, I think, the point that we're getting at is, you know, don't think about it as like a one and done thing, because oftentimes those breakout stories, they end up a lot sadder than yeah. we want. You know, they either become one hit wonders or they have other, you know, messier things happen, but there's like a one and done kind of mentality, which is not the way that music is. You don't just write one song. You don't just play one, yep. one piece of music.
I think about that so much. And it's why I encourage people, any artist that you really love, when you start liking that artist, when they pop off for you, follow, just even if they continue to put out work and you don't love the work, at least watch what happens to them over time. Because when you look at artists over a long period, especially like a lot of major label artists, you know, leave out the Beyoncés, the Taylor Swifts, the, sure. the cultural icons, but other artists that you might consider they have made it because, oh, they did a big tour or they got a big record deal or whatever, follow them long term enough. And I can think of some artists that I loved from my high school days that I don't know if they still have a career in music, mm-hmm. even though right. they were superstars back then. And that is the reality. So to bring it back to the YouTube thing in terms of sustainability for an artist, for me, I can just put out a few videos a month, do some live streams, connect with my community. And does it look like I'm a celebrity? No. Does it look like right. I'm some superstar? No. However, I'm able to pay all of my bills through the act of like creating my art and sharing it online. So I think like the most important part of that is, what do independent artists now consider to be success? And sure, if you're yeah. only looking to those big stars as that's what it means to be successful, that can be hugely defeating.
Absolutely.
I would say that if that is your metric for success, you're actually kind of setting yourself up for failure, because the truth of that is that there's a very, very small swath of people that will ever experience that form of success. And there's so much other success that you can have that fulfills you that will be probably more fulfilling than having that success, right? Because you also hear a lot of people that, or a lot of artists that function on that level, that talk about how empty that success feels.
Yes.
Yes.
When they attend.
And that's also a process we don't see. There aren't YouTube videos about how to become a breakout star, because no one wants that. No one wants to give tours of that particular sausage factory. Yes. They don't want that curtain peeled back, because then they'd have to admit, oh, this is because, you know, the parents bought the first recording session and you know, paid the record label $500,000 to make sure the song was successful. And so then, you know, and various strings got pulled. And that's not a reason that anyone should give up on a career. And I think that's really the difference that I've been reflecting on this a lot, and it came up in the last podcast. And it's a theme of what we're talking about now, viewing it as a career versus a job or a gig or a one and done thing. And so one of the questions that I wanted to ask you is about how you keep things interesting and beyond just the like doing a couple streams a month or creating a few tracks and that. There are other things you do that are outside of that, right? Like auctioning things off and doing other artistic and creative things that are still under the umbrella. So can you talk a little bit about how you get inspired to do those things and how that kind of ties into everything that you're doing?
Yeah, I think the beauty of leaning more into doing a community driven thing rather than trying to be like a viral, you know, YouTube creator or something like that is that I feel more of a freedom to go in different directions rather than just, here's this new piece of gear, everybody. It does this and it does that and it costs this much. Go check it out. Like, those videos are fine. They're informative. They definitely help people. And I love gear. Don't get me wrong. Like, you can see from behind me is a bunch of gear, like an unnecessary amount of gear. So I'm always down to share that. But it's always based on, you know, my passion level. Like, I always want to play with a new toy. Yeah, great. I always want to, like, you know, show it off a little bit. And if I can help people by showing off what that new toy does, fantastic. But if I feel like playing games on my stream, or if I feel like showing everybody how I can paint, like I talked about before, or if I feel like I want to have a big community event where people can come together and I can actually platform other independent artists from around the world, then I can do that because it's completely community driven. So, like, in part of the idea of, you know, being in service to others, like wanting to share my, you know, artistic point of view, tutorials and all that kind of thing. Even better if I can bring in groups of other artists from around the world, because every time I do a live stream, people share where they're watching from. It's literally like every country, not every country, but like across the world at a single time on a single live stream. And that is hugely inspiring for me. So trying to direct that energy to, you know, some good causes. We do a charity every year, for the Music and Youth Initiative, which they build great free music programs for young people in after-school programs. Like, doing that kind of thing, it just, like, I wouldn't still be doing this if I couldn't do those things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be able to do those things and go in different directions and not always go for the thing that you know is going to bring some viral success, it takes like a little bit of a shift in what you define as successful. Like, I guess if you look at my channel, you'll see videos that have such a range of views. Like, you'll see videos that have like 2,000 views. You'll see videos that have 100,000. You'll see a couple videos that have 1,000,000 views. Mm-hmm. Now, what I see, unfortunately, for a lot of artists is that once they get a taste of that, like, oh, 500,000 views, 1,000,000 views, once they get a taste of that, you start to notice something. They start to do that same thing over and over and over again.
Right.
And of course, if we think about what we just talked about before, like the long tail of a career in music, of a career as an artist, how could you stay sane doing the same thing over and over and over again? And also, if you train your audience to expect that, what mm-hmm. happens when you change as a person and decide, I want to try something new? So I don't see the viral success thing, chasing the viral success thing, as a very sustainable career model. And so I constantly, the shift and the going in the different directions and trying new things, it's the only way that I could sustain doing this long term. And it's the only reason I think that I've been able to stay doing this long term. It's like a shift in priorities, a shift in what you define as successful. Because if I thought every video that I put out, oh, I have 300,000 subscribers, but this video got 2,000 views, if I had to feel depressed about that, I wouldn't be able to do this. Instead, I just feel confident, like, okay, if 2,000 people watch the video, I'd say I probably positively impacted at least 50% of them.
Yeah.
And if I've positively impacted 1,000 people, then I feel good. And I made a video that I'm proud of. Regardless, like, when I put out a video, I don't know how it's going to do. I might have a guess. That guess is usually wrong. And I think anybody who makes videos will tell you that. Oh, I put in no effort and didn't expect this video to be great, and it popped off. Oh, I put so much time and effort into this video over here, and nobody saw it. It's more of a mental training, if anything, being able to sustain this, for sure.
Well, and that's a really good point, and one that I want to press on a little bit more. I know that when I did my YouTube channel, I had a couple of videos that had really good success on them. And it was exactly what you just said, which is like, I didn't really expect these ones to pop off. For some reason, they did. And then the ones that I thought, I was like, oh, this is going to do really well, they didn't. But one thing that I found a lot, I'm not a very online person. I don't like social media, which is weird because I'm a director of brand marketing. I should be on social media more. And monitoring it. But I don't like spending a lot of time on my phone. And what I ended up finding was, like, when I would release videos, I was glued to...
Refresh.
The analytics page. And just be like, well, how is this one doing next to my other top 10 videos or whatever? And I feel like there's a real opportunity for a dive in mental health when you...
Big time.
When you take a step into trying to be a content creator and you're dependent on this algorithm, it's hard to separate the idea of, you know, whether or not your video is a good video from the idea of whether or not an algorithm. Exactly. How do you navigate that? Like, as a content creator who's been doing this for as long as you have, especially for creators who are just getting into it now and are maybe glued to their screen.
Sure.
How do you suggest navigating that?
Well, there's like two parts of it, right? There's one part of it where you do need to approach it like it is work. If you are trying to build something that sustains your career as an artist, you do need to build some discipline in there so that you view it as work, meaning you're paying attention to what works on social media. You can't completely be like, well, I'm an artist, so I'm just going to do it my way and we'll see. Like, there are certain things that you can do to showcase your work authentically, but still make sense in the venue of social media. So that's fine. So I wouldn't say I'm a person that hates social media. However, exactly what you just talked about, the idea of being glued to your analytics, you do need to have a clear North Star for yourself. You cannot possibly have a North Star that says, I want to get 500,000 views on every video. It's not a worthwhile North Star. So, like, what is your actual mission as an artist? Do you want to be sharing your work with an audience? Yes, of course. Do you want to help people? Do you want to be entertaining people? What is your goal? So, like, if your North Star is entertaining people, you shouldn't even be looking at the view count. You should be looking at, oh, did people laugh at my joke in the comments? Or are people talking in the comments about how they enjoy this? And it doesn't matter if 100,000 people viewed that. If 10 people in the comments like talk about how much it entertained them, how much they loved your video, then that should be what is giving you sort of like the gratification and the motivation to move forward. So to solve that problem, actually, of the refreshing of the analytics and stuff like that, I don't have any social media apps on my phone at all. I have a second device. I have just an iPad that has all my social media on it, including the YouTube Studio app, which is the app that you use to like check your analytics and stuff. So when I put out a video, everything is scheduled ahead of time. Even the Instagram posts are scheduled ahead of time. I know that the video is going out, but I definitely don't check it within the first hour. I might check in on it a little later in the day. Even better if I can resist that urge and not check in until the next day.
Yeah.
So like I had to completely break that because, you know, we used to have a relationship with the internet where we went to the internet, and now the internet is everywhere. So like it's always in our pocket, and we have to really like build things to keep ourselves in check. So like me not having the social media on my phone means anytime I leave the house, I cannot check my analytics. I can't check my messages, can't check my comments. I can't check anything besides if somebody texted me or if I got an email.
Right.
It's completely transformed how I interact online. So when I talked about North Star before, my North Star is, of course, I want to positively impact people. So after like looking at, you know, years of doing content, knowing like the numbers and the history and everything, I should at least be reaching 1,000 people. And I think my content is pretty positive. So I'd like to positively impact 1,000 people with each video. Mm-hmm. And then I'd also like to share my art and or share a way of, you know, helping people within that. So that is like totally up to me. Like, do I feel like this video is helpful for somebody, or do I feel like it authentically showcases my art? If the answer is yes to me, then I'm happy. And then if it reached and positively impacted 1,000 people, then I'm happy. If it gets 500,000 views, fantastic, but I'm not more happy.
Yeah. You know? Well, yeah, it's not necessarily the view count or how many views it got. It's what are the people saying in the comments? How are people responding to this?
It's that community
piece that you put out. Yeah.
It's why community matters so much more.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a huge difference when you're looking at the right metrics for the right results, because yes, it's very when looking at any analytics dashboard of any kind, it's really easy to make false assumptions about what is causing certain behaviors. And like you mentioned earlier about people who get one breakout video that the algorithm blasts it out to everybody, they start doing that exact same video over and over because they don't want to, they don't want to risk, I have to do it exactly the same way and get the lightning to strike again. But it probably won't for reasons that, because it probably did in the first place for reasons that had nothing to do with the
out of your control completely.
Yeah. Things that have nothing to do with what you as the creator did. So making sure that you're staying in your lane with stuff that makes you happy as the creator and keeps you engaged and interested and enjoying the process. That's one of the things that when people get into doing any kind of professional career in music, I think from the outside in, from the non-musician perspective, it's easy to think that it's all fun and games because music is an enjoyable process. But it's easy for a non-musician to say that because they don't know that a lot of what they don't see and hear is stuff that's frustrating, stuff that doesn't sound very good, stuff that we're not proud of how we performed that stuff there's also a tendency to think, oh, they played that line on that instrument once, they must be able to do it exactly that same way every time, or made this that perfectly executed complicated drum fill on the beat pad once, they must be able to do that at will and stuff equally complicated. And yes, it, even for the best, most talented, most skilled professional musicians who do perform with that level of quality most of the time, the every time doesn't exist, you know, like because of the that's just not the way human performance of music works. So yeah.
And I know you all interact probably a lot with people closer to the classical world, you know, in scoring, and in that world, there's so much more context for what you just talked about, the practice behind what it takes to get to that performance level.
Right.
Music school, the institution of music school, everybody knows you spend X amount of hours in the practice room, you perfect your instrument, it's very technique focused, etc.
Yes.
One thing that I am trying to drill down on more for myself is the idea that exists in music production and in electronic music too, because there's not the context for that currently. We don't have, because of the way electronic music evolved, the institutions of higher education are not keeping up with it very well, like institutions tend to do, not be able to keep up with current things well. So people learning it don't have that context of like,
right.
No, you need to practice for 8 hours before you're going to be able to play this well, whatever the number is. I don't think it needs to be super dogmatic. Right. So some of the things that I will show, like for my channel members, like I'll post videos of my rehearsal takes, or I'll post videos of like me messing up a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And that sometimes is like, for me as an artist, like I have artist friends that I really admire their work. And I'm like, can you just, when the next time you're practicing, can you just set up a camera and just film yourself practicing? You don't have to talk or say anything or perform or do anything. I just want to see what your practice session looks like, because we don't have that in electronic music. It's like, so, it's too new and it's, you know, not institutionalized in the same way that the classical side is. So it's difficult, but I want to communicate that more to the audience. So people don't just, I have so many people that come to my channel, they see one of my videos, they buy a MIDI keyboard. They have no idea how to play the piano,
right.
No idea how to use a DAW. I don't know what the thinking is when they buy the piano, but I get the comment that's like, I just bought this and I realize I don't know anything at all about what to do with it.
Yeah.
So I want to help people get there, but I also want to help people understand like what it takes to get there.
Well, and that applies to anything, right? So it applies to music, yeah, but it also applies to content creation. It applies to, you know, exploring these different avenues, succeeding, failing, you know, posting a video that doesn't do very well, that nobody sees, everything that we were just talking about, learning from things that don't do well and all of that. And so I want to kind of backtrack a little bit here. You were using YouTube as a repository for your performances. You decided to engage with YouTube on its terms as a, you know, making YouTube videos. There are so many other things, so many other skills that you have to develop, not just music. And I've noticed that your videos are usually very beautifully shot.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You have some cinematography chops going on, in your videos.
I don't know if
videos.
I'd go that far, but thanks.
You know, was that something that you were always interested in? Was that something that you picked up along the way as you were engaging with YouTube?
When I started doing YouTube, like when I started and decided, okay, I'm going to do tutorials and performances, the whole thing, I absolutely hated the video aspect of it.
Yeah.
Like I tried to get by, or I got by doing the bare minimum. So I would shoot the videos on my Galaxy Note 7, an Android phone. I'd upload the footage into Google Drive. And then I had a really crappy iPad at the time. And I would download those videos from Google Drive, import them into iMovie on the iPad, edit them on the iPad. And then, oh, hi to the dog.
Yeah. Sorry. My roommate's dog is getting antsy.
But yeah, so like that whole process that I just talked about was because I really hated the video aspect at first, and I wanted to do the bare minimum when it came to interacting with that. I wanted to make a tutorial, but I hated that process. Over time, I started to realize, like, I actually like movies a lot. I don't know why I say I like movies more than music. I think music for me as a means of expression is always number one. But maybe as a consumer of art, I actually maybe like consuming movies a little bit more, to the point where like I consume like director's commentary and things like that.
Sure.
So like that kind of deeper aspect of things. So once I had that kind of like self-awareness and self-realization, I guess, I started thinking of it more like, oh, the video is actually an extension of the music. It's an extension of the art. So if I can go to a beautiful location and shoot this performance, or if I can, you know, just make this mundane tutorial look a little more interesting, it's actually part of the work. It's not this chore that I have to do in order to get the work out there. It's like part of the craft. And I think a lot of people... A knee-jerk reaction, I think, for a lot of people who hear like, oh, if you're a musician, you have to make content, but I just want to be a musician. It's like, okay, that's fine. There are avenues for you where maybe you don't have to make any content or whatever. But if you step back and think of yourself holistically as an artist, like, isn't it great if you could like produce a little short film that features your music that like is interesting and like you can have creative input not only on the sound but the visuals, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like to me it's just part of the art. But I totally understand for some people where it's just they don't have that passion, but I do. So I'm thankful that I do. And, you know, I've grown to really love the video aspect and the production aspect of the whole thing.
So what was it like for you when you decided to start focusing on that aspect of it? What were the steps you started to take in order to implement the video aspect into your content?
It's like, okay, step one, learn a little bit about cameras, get a little bit of a better camera, stop shooting on the phone. Oh, if I get an iPhone, it's going to look a little better. Okay, let's try that. Oh, if I get a little like point and shoot camera, like maybe I can make things look even better. Or what does this lens do? What's an ND filter? What are frame rates? It was just, it became part of the thing because I don't know. I think every artist probably feels this way, but I'm never like content with what I'm making. You know, I'm never content with the level that I'm at, really. Like I have this just drive that like if I have the space and the time to make things a little bit better, I will try to make things a little bit better. That comes with the music and the video aspect of what I do. So the video, it was just like that. It's just like you learn a little bit every time. If you go back, like I keep all my old YouTube videos up. So if you sort my videos by, you know, reverse chronological, you can see what the production looked like back then and maybe scroll a little bit further down. You'll see it get a little bit better, and then scroll to present day. And hopefully it looks like it's the best it's been. But hopefully, you know, 2-3 years from now or whatever, the stuff that I'm putting out looks even better. Or is like improved in some way. But that's the constant journey that I'm on. It's like it back to the numbers thing. If your North Star is like, oh, I want to get a certain amount of subscribers or views or whatever, like that's so not fulfilling. Because by the time you get there, it's like you got there. Now what?
Yeah.
So if you're fulfilled by actually just doing a little better every time, it's like so much more motivating and so much easier to just keep making stuff and feel good about making stuff. Not that I always feel good 100% of the time. I want to make that clear.
I think that's a really important point because a lot of our audience is in the group of composers for film, video games, animation, other sure. media projects. And so the music that they're often creating is functional. Yep. And I think it's such an important piece to, and I said this on the last podcast, that as you're developing your career, it's really important to understand the media for which you're writing. And I mean, I agree 100%. Develop your cinematography chops and learn how films are shot. Develop your video editing chops. Create a little short film and do the music for it yourself. That process will teach you so much about composing for film. If your goal is to be a composer and you want to compose for film, understand the language of film better, be able to, and then as a career building step, you then have something that you can show prospective directors and clients you're going to work with. This is a film that I made and did the music and sound for myself. I understand. And, you know, here's my demonstration to you that I understand all of these things in a way that, mm-hmm. that we'll be able to work together. You know, that to me is, if nothing else, it's skill development, and there's always synergy between different skills that you develop. If you develop your video editing chops, you'll learn something about how music editing works. If you develop your composing chops, you'll learn something about how dramatic pacing works for when you're video editing or writing a screenplay or whatever it is. Understanding when you do your own sound design and dialogue editing, understanding how to write better, more intelligible dialogue, or as you know, what all these things that elevate little aspects of your craft. And I think it's easy to get overwhelmed by all of that stuff. But part of the reason that it's in a career long objective is you can pick one thing to focus on each time you do a project. I think something that's coming through for me as you're speaking is that you seem to really enjoy feeling like you've learned something new or practiced something new or developed a new skill in some way. And it's not just about doing the same thing over and over, even though you can distill it down to the thing that you love doing is creating music. So as long as you have that as, you know, but there's so much to be explored throughout that it stays interesting as long as you want it to be.
In a way, like I have been doing the same thing over and over again. I've been making music and making videos for like years, year after year after year. So like, I don't know, like you have to be, I think of all these artists, you know, that have been around for decades, or like you see like actors and, you know, any cultural celebrity that has been involved in the arts, a lot of them you see like, oh, it's kind of weird. They're doing something different now. And it's like, yeah, because the last thing you remember seeing them in, or the last thing you remember them for, is something 20 years ago. They're a right, different yeah. person now. But I just like, I have my notebook in front of me. So like, I remember anything you watch with like Ridley Scott or whatever. I watched so many like behind the scenes with Ridley Scott, the director, and he, there's so much good behind the scenes stuff, but he, it all, it's always talked about how he does like little Ridley grams, like little storyboards and stuff for his films. But I just like started doing that for my videos. And it's like, first of all, it feels good creatively to like sketch out an idea, not just in words, but in pictures. But also it elevates the end product because it's been more thoughtfully designed and more Absolutely. Thoughtfully like, because I'm not just making entertainment, right? I'm trying to get an idea across. I'm trying to present my work as an artist. So just finding more thoughtful ways to do that. But again, like if I had the mentality of like, oh, I'm just a musician. I can't, you know, I'm just a musician. I don't want to make little sketches. I don't want to like think about the how I'm visually represented. Like, I definitely encourage all artists, whether you work in like a very functional environment or not, or whether you have a little more freedom, like think of yourself holistically as an artist. If I think of any of the artists that I admire, they're more, no matter the medium of focus that they have, whether they're a designer, whether they're a musician, whether they're, you know, a composer, they have some level of big picture vision. And exactly to what you were saying, Steve, about, you know, knowing a little bit about each area that you're working in, it makes you a better collaborator and makes people more likely want to work with you because you can like better communicate about what the end goal is of the whole creative project, especially in a team environment like that, like in film composition and game composition. I think it will elevate your work dramatically, and it might make you feel like you're going a little bit slower. If you're a musician and you suddenly are spending time focused on video, you might be like, well, dang, I could make like so many more records if I didn't have to make a video. And it's like, maybe, but probably not actually. Like,
right.
And
right.
also who would care?
Right. You know, that's the other, exactly. That's the, you can't insist yourself into success yeah. in that way. You can't just say I am a successful music producer. If you're not successfully producing music, you know, then that's
right.
But I read an article a few years ago that was about reinventing yourself and making career pivots. And one of the things it talked about was this concept of always be developing new skills, but never necessarily abandoning the old ones. When you have sure. when you add something new to your tool set, it's not forsaking everything that you did up to that point. It's finding a new avenue for something else that's enjoyable. You know, I mean, yep. editing skills are not just isolated to music or movies or film or photo editing or dialogue editing. It's similar concepts used in all of them, and the underlying idea of making something look nicer, sound nicer, flow better, have better timing, all of those aspects transcend the media form, really. And they go down to the human experience of it. And one of the other things that this article said was, when can I start saying I do X? And the answer is today, right now. Mm-hmm. If you decide right. that's what you want to start doing and you want to add a new skill to your tool set, you can start saying that you do that right now. Take one step towards that. Do literally anything to begin that journey, and now it's a part of you.
Yeah, the other thing about adding all those skills to the tool belt is like, even though I have all these outward, even though I do all this social media stuff, like I'm pretty creatively introverted. So like I prefer to be working like on my own, by myself, doing these things and of course sharing them. But the creative process is usually very introverted for me. So if I'm going to be like that, I pretty much don't ever want to have to ask somebody for help. I feel like the worst thing I could do is ask somebody for help. Not because I feel too good to ask somebody for help, because I strongly do not want to inconvenience the people around me. I don't want them yeah. to feel like I'm imposing on them, that kind of thing. So like every tool that I add to my tool belt, how to edit photos, how to do a little bit of graphic design, how to make my website, how to make my videos, you know, like now I just become closer and closer to becoming this like fully independent creative.
Right.
Could the work be better if I hired an all-star mixing and mastering person? Yeah, probably, but
maybe
to
but maybe
what
not.
Delta? Like to yeah. what, like who would notice the difference? That yeah. mixing other, mastering engineer?
Other mixing mastering engineers.
Right, right.
If you
right.
gave them the A-B comparison.
Yes, exactly. But like my point is like, at what point does it actually make a difference? You know, like just people will consume your work and the ones consuming your work don't think like that. They're not constantly thinking about how the sausage was made. Many of them are not.
Well, and I think it's a good thing to have an understanding, even if you do work with other people.
Yeah.
It's a really good thing to have an understanding of how that works. I remember my band back when I was like in my late teens, early 20s, we mixed a lot of our own records, and my bass player was the mixing engineer, and I have a little bit of synesthesia. I think of audio or sounds in terms of shapes. So I used to try and communicate to him how I wanted the mix to sound by drawing a picture. I'd be mm-hmm. like, yeah, the drums are like this bowl, and mm-hmm. The bass is like this pillar that's coming out of the bowl. The guitars are like these clouds that are floating around the top of the pillar. Sure. And it took him, you know, the years of us working together and being in a band together for him to be able to interpret exactly what it was that I was saying.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I started mixing my own stuff that I began to understand how to communicate that, like
you're translating
in practical terms
from your language to everybody else's language.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, this bowl means I want a cut in this frequency range or something like that. And so having that understanding is a really good one to then take and collaborate with other people on.
Yep.
And then just also in terms of, you know, going back to what you guys were saying about doing other forms of art. I've always been a big believer in the idea that creativity is not necessarily conscious of how you're using it. It's just conscious of whether or not you are. And especially if you've spent your life, you know, pursuing or engaging with one form of creativity, that can get really stale. And especially if you do it on your own, you know, Tetro, like you, I'm a pretty introverted creator. I haven't recorded or created a record with another person in over a decade now. All of the records that I release, I do completely on my own from start to finish. But one of the things that I do miss about being in a band is the fact that I am only as good as my own limitations when it comes to the music that I can write. Collaborating with other people can bring in these other ideas that can then expand your boundaries or expand those limitations for you. And I think the same can be said about just creativity in general. You know, if you're a music creator and that's all you do is make music, you might get bored with that. But if you start painting or you start making videos, that actually might inform your creative process in a way that you never thought it would, because now you have a different perspective.
Yeah.
Right.
And it makes you like being a beginner at something again, like especially if you're a musician and you've been playing music for a long time. I found that when I took up painting, I was a better beginner, first of all, because I understood better like the process of learning how to do something. But mm-hmm. I also was able to think like a beginner again, which is mm-hmm. something I'm thinking a lot about lately, especially with the way like social media platforms change and shift. YouTube is different from when I first started. So like, how does what I'm doing need to change, or how can I adapt to the current landscape to make sure, you know, I'm reaching and impacting the people that I want to be reaching? And then taking on this new hobby like painting, thinking like a beginner, now you approach your main medium, like music or whatever it is, and you remember some things. You remember some things that you haven't thought of since you were a beginner because you've been so steeped in it all this time, you know? And that is like a really, really valuable thing, even if it's just going to be a hobby, even if it's not like, you remember, we used to have this old Windows 95 computer in my house, family computer. And once in a while, my dad would do this thing called like defragging the computer. Like mm-hmm. when it would get slow, he would defrag the computer.
Yep.
And I don't know if this is true, but what I remember is like, okay, the computer's working, and as it's working and running, it's kind of just putting files in all the places that it's convenient in that moment, but not the most efficient places. And then sure. when you defrag it, it takes all those files and it puts them back into the places so everything can run more smoothly. Whenever I'm doing something that's not music related, whether it's video games or whether it's like painting or like, you know, watching a show on Netflix, I feel like my brain is defragging. Like it's taking all of those little anxieties, all of those things that I wish I did differently about this mix, wish I did differently about this video. It's kind of like filing them all appropriately because my brain is like completely out of that world. Video games especially, I can completely lose. I'm focused on a mission, a goal. Maybe I'm playing with friends. I'm completely out of that part of my brain, that artist part of my brain for the most part in that time. So when I come back feeling refreshed, you know, it's like, it's a totally different creative approach than if you've been sitting and like banging your head against the wall. So that's why I worry about some of the folks out there who are just a little too rigid in what they believe they need to be doing in order to be considered an artist, you know?
Sure.
When people become too concerned with that and they become ultra rigid and they begin, you know, kind of overdoing it.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. Keeping your mental health up is so important in this this industry. It's very draining working on music sometimes, and it's very draining when you're putting yourself out there to the world on YouTube and getting feedback from people, dealing with trolls. There's
at
always,
all hours feedback even, at yeah. any time on a video. You could be getting feedback on something you put out 5 years ago.
Right.
You could be getting feedback about your appearance. You could be getting feedback about your work. You could be getting feedback from somebody who has no qualifications at all to be giving the feedback that they're giving.
Yep.
Yeah.
At all times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just part of it.
I remember getting comments like, "Who would do that to their ears?" Because I have plugs.
Because you have gauges, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
why would someone do that to their ears? I was like, this is not the point of this video.
I mean, the fact that I had my nails painted for a while was like a huge point of like contention. It's like, it's like amazing. I'm here trying to teach you how to do music theory, and you're concerned about the color of my nails. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It does say a lot more about where your head is at and your priorities, you know. But it comes with the territory, I suppose.
Yeah. How do you manage, you know, how do you manage burnout? Because I feel like, you know, there's always stuff on YouTube about you need to be posting this often, like once a week, you need to be uploading a video and those kinds of things. You know, to be a content creator requires a lot of creative output that I personally, as a creative person, don't feel like I always have, right? It's like,
yeah,
I feel like creativity also requires space and time to sort of digest what it is that you've taken in before you can put it out. How do you manage that?
Well, I think, like, again, the nature of what I do, the documenting the process of the just making the music and plus the community driven aspect, it allows me to go in any direction that I want to go in on a given day. If today we're talking about finishing music or whatever, if that's what I feel like doing, if that's what I'm motivated to do in that moment, that's what we're doing. If today I want to start something totally new and I'm going to grab a piece of gear off the wall that I haven't used in a while, just for the sake of it, I'm going to do that. And the community shows up. So it's that, it's like being able to go in different directions, but it's also like, I left all the pressure stuff behind like a while ago when I like just refined my North Star to be like 1,000 views and make sure that I'm proud of the work.
Mm-hmm.
If you have those two things, like frequency, again, we talked about the long-term success of a creative, of a person. We've seen lots of examples of creatives who have attempted to do things long-term and have done it unsustainably and have had a lot of negative impacts either in their life, like literally where they didn't survive it, or in their personal life. And I have no desire to see that. I don't know how many more warning signs, like public warning signs we need, you know, of a celebrity potentially taking their own life, or these, you know, you hear about these families, you hear about these independent artists who basically almost didn't make it through a period in their life because they were putting so much pressure on themselves. None of that is worth it to me. If I see somebody say like, you need to post this much on YouTube, you need to post this much on Instagram and make sure you're doing it at this time, it's not worth it. I'll go be a postman. Like I don't need to. I'll make music at night and I'll go work for the post office.
Yeah.
Instead, like, okay, like I'm going to do what I'm comfortable with doing and I'm going to go find the people that like what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I feel like any medium of art, any kind of music, all of that, you can find your people. You know what I mean? You can find people that dig the same thing you do. But you should also be realistic. Like if you make, I'm going to make something up, like spacecore, banjo, jazz opera music, the
that
general
sounds awesome.
Audience yeah, for I'm, that
is me.
Right. So we definitely have an audience of one already, but I would say the general audience for that versus an EDM audience, for instance. If I said right, sure. EDM, I could get a lot more people to raise their hands, right? So like if you're doing something that's cool and unique and that you're passionate about, then you should view it from that perspective. It's cool and unique, and ultimately the pool of people that you're going to be reaching with that is smaller than if you happen to like or do a certain other thing. That's the same thing with YouTube. If I felt passionate about, you know, whatever is viral on YouTube about at the moment, I would do it. But instead, right. I'm just going to do what I'm passionate about. And if that cycle, if those planets align someday where suddenly the thing that I'm already doing is suddenly something that's super popular, that'll be great. But if not, for now, I've got my community. I've got my supporters, like any traditional independent artist has. You know, the level changes all the time. But it's not worth, like the burnout thing, it's not worth burning out. It's not worth, you know, risking your mental health for the sake of keeping up or like keeping up some appearances or setting some unreasonable, unattainable goal that you never had control of in the first place.
With that in mind, have there ever been like times where you've thought, yeah, you know what? I don't really want to make any videos this month, and then taken a month off? Or do you just feel constantly motivated to make that content?
I always feel constantly motivated to make things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say constantly motivated to make things, because I don't want people to think like, oh, I'm for that grind set lifestyle. You know, that's not what I'm saying. But it's like in the vein of sustainability, I've made it so making things, whatever that may be, if that's a video, a piece of music, doing a live stream, whatever, I've made it so that those things are not difficult and not a heavy lift. Sure. And that I don't feel pressure to do them. So it doesn't matter. Like some months I might say, oh, I'm going to make a video every week this month. Or today if I wake up and I say, oh, I want to do an extra live stream this week, I'll go live. Or, oh, I got this new thing, let's make 3 videos about it because I love it so much. Whatever. But it's also like, oh, I really have only one thing I'm working on this month.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's great. Like, but I'm always creating something. So there's been some time where I've spent away from home, out of the country, and I've still been able to make stuff, you know? And it's not because I felt pressure to make stuff. It's because I enjoy making stuff and I enjoy connecting with my community. So like, I want to be super clear for people listening that I don't think it's about the grind set. That's not what I'm saying. You have to grind. You have to do it no matter what, push through. But it's more about making systems in your life so that doing the thing that you love is easy to do. Making yeah. stuff should be easy to do. It's not always easy, but you should have mechanisms around you that like whenever you feel like making something, you can. It's not like an arduous process.
So I guess I'm asking this more for myself because I haven't uploaded anything to YouTube in, I think, close to 10 months on my channel.
Sure.
And you've seen my videos. You've seen that
yeah.
I throw myself through a portal. And so it's like, it's very heavy lifting.
It's a lot of work. Yeah.
Pre-production, post-production. And I had a lot of fun doing it and I really enjoyed making it. But then once I started working, at Musio, you know, I'm also a dad. I was doing these 3 things and I was like, I don't have the energy at all to put into this. How important do you think it is for people to sort of give themselves that grace where if they do hit that point where they're like, hey, I need to take a step back from this. How important do you think it is for them to be able to do that? Like, 'cause I know for me, what I've been telling myself is YouTube's always going to be there. Yes. I have this audience that I've amassed through these months that I was doing it, and I do feel some kind of obligation to them. But at the same time, it's like we're all human beings, and I need to, you know, keep my internal mental status sustainable as well, and my creative output sustainable as well. So, like, to anybody that might be feeling that, me. What do you say to them?
The sustainability is all that matters, because if you instead said, oh, I pushed through and I kept making a video every week and it was arduous, and Casey Neistat, I think, is a good point of reference. We all know Casey Neistat, so famous vlogger, one of the pioneers in video creation on YouTube. This is why I remind people, watch people's full careers and listen to what they say. Find every podcast that people go on, listen to what they say about what's actually happening. Because every podcast Casey Neistat goes on, when he talks about the period of his life, when he was vlogging every single day, when all of us would have looked at him and said, wow, this guy's super successful. I want to be just like him. And now he's super rich as a result of it. He goes on podcast now and talks about how his marriage almost fell apart and how his personal life was in shambles because of that. So what folks have to realize is that if you don't have balance in your life, not just in your creative medium, you're making a choice. You're making a choice. Maybe there are many people who said, doesn't matter, the ends justify the means, but not everybody's getting the same ends. Not everybody's going to end up like Casey with a hugely successful career. He got lucky.
Well, and do the ends justify the means?
They absolutely don't. Your life follows, like you just talked about, like having your family and like having a good career and a good job, and you wouldn't have a family if you weren't passionate about having a family. You wouldn't be in your job if you weren't passionate about the work. So we are whole people. We are not just this one thing that we become known for or whatever. And if you make a YouTube channel, or if you're doing social media, if you're an artist in any form and you're putting out work, you have to build sustainability into your life. So the mechanisms for creating should be easy for you in your life. Mm-hmm. And then part of it is like, you might have a creative vision that is beyond your capability, even if it was within your capability in a given moment. Even if you were able to make like these crazy YouTube videos where you're jumping through portals, you know, in a given moment, or even if there was a time in your life where you were able to, you know, make an album every month. You know, that was true for you at that time of your life. But now it's time to have a reality check and like actually consider what's possible for me now in this moment that would make me feel fulfilled, that would make me having work that I'm still proud of, where I could still be making stuff, putting stuff out like I want to, but not destroying every other aspect of my life.
Yeah. Well, that's always so important. That's so important as a creative person, whether you're making YouTube videos, whether you're a content creator, whether you're making albums and releasing them. Yes, we are creatives. Yes, we are musicians. You're a content creator. You're this, you're that. You're also a human being. And so like, if you do something long enough, your relationship to that thing is going to change because you're going to change.
Yes.
You know, I remember when I was 18, I could write a full length record in like a month. 14 songs, boom, no big deal, no problem. Man,
times are easier back then, huh?
Yeah, when you're young and have nothing but time. Yeah.
And we'll write about all the things and let all the emotions pour out.
Yeah, this doesn't even need to make sense, these lyrics. They can just sound pretty.
Yeah,
back when we were liabilities with no responsibilities.
Exactly.
For sure.
And now it's like, you know, I'm lucky if I can write and release an EP every 2 or 3 years, if I have the creative energy to put towards that, because it is a lot of creative energy to put into that. And I'm not in the same place that I was in. And I know that I've had a lot of sort of like internal identity struggles around that. It's like, well, why can't I be as prolific as I used to be? But it's like being okay with the idea that you're going to change as a person, and like being kind to yourself, giving yourself that grace to change and to not be a creative machine.
Yeah. Being aware of the reality around you. Like I have friends that release a single every single month, and they've actually got it ready. They've got it planned 3 months in advance, 5, 6 months in advance.
Yeah.
And they've got that release schedule rolling. Last year, I released an ambient album around this time in March. Haven't released anything until my single that came out today. So like a year later. What am I supposed to feel bad because, oh, I have a friend that releases a track every month and I'm releasing like something once a year? No, that's just my reality. And I've made it work and I feel good and I'm proud of my work. could I try? Could I strive? If striving to release more falls into my goals at some point, I will build structures and systems around myself so that I can do that. But ultimately, it makes me think of too, because I know a lot of the audience is, you know, film composing and game composing and things like that, classical world. You need to have people around you that are supportive and understand the creative journey that you're on. If you need to be, you know, in a session that goes from 4 p.m. to midnight, you're going to miss dinner that night. Right. And is your partner okay and supportive with that? I'm thankful that I have a partner that is very supportive of all the creative things that I do. I have a family that's very supportive of all the creative things that I do. So if my life looks a little different than, you know, relatives that I have that work a normal 9-to-5 or a usual quote unquote career, I don't feel bad about that. So there's a lot of like life elements that go into it too, and communicating that with the people around you and making sure, you know, you are paying attention to if those people around you are being supportive and letting them at least know that, hey, my journey is going to look a little different than the average, you know, typical worker journey.
I mean, this is bringing up a lot about identity and values, and both of the are extremely personal things that, that are unique to everybody. And it's not really up to anyone else what your identity is and what your value structure is. And so going back to what you said earlier about people who are like, oh, you have to be putting out this much content, you have to be doing it this much, and if you don't do that, then you're a failure. That to me, anyone who's saying stuff like that is automatically not qualified. Yes, exactly. You can assume they're not qualified to be giving any kind of advice. That's
hard about that is the amount of affirmation they will get. So you will see people saying those things, and then you will see them getting lots of affirmation.
Right.
You'll see people like spreading hate or being trolls, and you'll see them getting lots of affirmation. So it's easy to feel like you're completely wrong, like you're the crazy one.
Yeah.
Right.
But like if you're so true and like so like I don't want to sound like overly confident and that like I have my shit together all the time, because I definitely don't, and I definitely have my own struggles mentally. No one does. But I do take the time to like write shit down in a notebook. Like the things that we're talking about, like the North Star and how can I make stuff more sustainable and what are some of my goals? That's stuff that I write down.
Yeah.
And I might never revisit it again, but something about writing it down, setting it in ink or whatever, like makes it more real, so that when I encounter those situations, you know, oh, this person says I have to do X, Y, and Z to be considered successful, or this person commented and said I'm a this or I'm a that, I have a solid, you know, mindset that makes it so that doesn't affect me as badly as it could, you know?
Right. Because you've thought through it and you've written through it and you've considered these things. Yeah.
And you do it regularly. I mean, I have a set of 7 areas of my life that I try to work on every day. So every morning, or as close, not every morning, because no one does everything they set out to do every day. But most mornings, I try to set out 7 intentions for the day in each of these different areas: physical, creative, intellectual, various professional, different responsibilities that I have. I set out, okay, here's what I'm going to do today that checks this box. And then later at the end of the day, I go back through and I say either I did this or I didn't do this. But if I didn't do this thing that I set out to do, I find another way in which I accomplished that. Because there are 7 areas of life that happen. The time passes either way, whether it's what I spent, what I intended to spend it doing, or another way in which it was achieved. Something happened that satisfies that criteria, and being able to say I did something that made me that I learned something new. Maybe it was something that I didn't expect to learn. Maybe it was something that isn't strictly speaking useful or to every aspect of my life, but it's something that I didn't know when I woke up this morning, and now I know it. And being able to consistently track that progress and making sure that something is happening that I can feel good about, that takes the naysayers out of the equation. Yep. And anyone who else who's watching that journey, because so much of the time when you do things like this to put yourself out there, that becomes your identity in other people's minds. They see that last thing that they saw you do, And maybe they may not be watching everything that you do. They may have seen one of your videos. You know, someone in your 320 some thousand subscribers is probably someone who watched one of your videos in the last 10 years and hasn't been following that journey. So they have a different version of you in their mind than you actually are. And there's a great book called The Four Agreements that talks about not taking anything personally, because everyone is living in their own version of the world, and everything they see and perceive and understand is a reflection of themselves. It's not actually that other person. So no matter what anyone says or does, it's not about you, it's about them. So don't listen to the trolls.
And that's like super exaggerated online too, right?
Yes.
Because you never know at what the person's on ramp was to them getting to you, to them saying the thing that they're going to say, positive or negative, right?
Right.
Right.
So the identity thing is like something I've been thinking a lot about, because, you know, my artist name, Tatro, that's my last name. That's like my literal name. And so my channel's name is Tatro. So everything that I make and put out is, and basically, you know, everything that I do in that sense, because it's also my career, is so closely tied to my identity. Mm-hmm. And I realize how that's not true for everybody. Some people have jobs and go to work, and even though they may like their job, they don't tie that to their identity. They are, you know, something other. They would define themselves as something other than what they do every day. And there's a vlogger that I watch, and she, you know, she's a successful vlogger. She does well. She gets brand deals, you know, has a popular channel, whatever. And she has been talking about in her vlogs lately how she got a job as a barista just to do something that was completely separate from herself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that is like, I think a lot of people think about like, oh, you were a content creator, but now you're working at a coffee shop. Like, what are you, a failure?
Right.
Like, right. But that simple perspective shift of like, I'm doing something because like not everything I do in my life needs to be tied to my identity. So I'm thinking of that as that's a daily thing that I'm thinking about. It's like, does everything I'm doing need to be tied so closely to my identity? Could I have a faceless creative outlet, you know, that was not me or whatever? And of course, like you said, like people perceive you a certain way based on what you put out online, but everything I put out online is not the entirety of my life. There's a lot of things that I don't share about my life online. And so how could I ever take somebody's judgment of me so seriously when I know that to be true?
Yes.
It's funny. It's literally the reason why I threw my hat in with jumping into a more corporate environment, like why I worked for Artifon and then why I now work for Musio and Cinesamples. I got tired of having everything that I do be pushing myself out into the world, and then like wondering how people were going to respond to it too, whether or not it was going to be successful on, you know, in terms of however I may have defined success at that particular time in my life. It's easier for me to just like go be a person on a team that puts these skills to use that have nothing to do with people's perception of me.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
I still maintain some work outside of my self as Tatro. So I still do some mission driven work where I'm applying all the skills that I've learned over the years with like video creation and just like social media stuff, telling stories. I still do a lot of that work on the side, and I don't talk about it at all on my social media. It's completely separate from me as an artist. And that also helps me stay fulfilled. Like, I keep coming back to this idea because, you know, having been to music school, you know, these people that they're heads down in the practice room at all times. They never stop. This is who they are. Like, it's kind of like a one note personality type thing. I highly encourage every artist, every musician, whatever your medium, you got to have more than one thing.
Yeah.
You know, you got to not just be head down. Like, I don't want to speak for everybody. Of course. Do I think that there's some people that could be one track on something and they're super passionate and they're super content with their life doing that? Fantastic. If you're content with your life, I'm not talking to you. But if you're feeling some level of like tension, it might be because you're just too head in the sand deep into the one thing that you're doing. And like a more holistic approach, I think, is going to yield better results mentally, at least.
I think the type of person that you're describing who's locked in the practice room is very traditional of the type of classical performer, like a violinist who wants to be the principal violinist in an orchestra. And
yes,
people who are going down that route, it's a great route to go down if you want that.
Yes.
You just have to understand the stakes are very high. It's extraordinarily competitive. There are very few opportunities for that. And there's not a ton of glory in it. There, and that's fine too. I mean, not everything that you know, you don't have to do everything for the glory. And that's something that I think can be, it's easy to conflate that. Are you okay?
Something happened there.
Yeah.
To bring that back to the YouTube thing. So on another whole underlying thing of as why I chose this career pathway and why it's working well for me is that it sidesteps most of the traditional gatekeepers.
Yeah.
So if you think of that classical violinist who's going to train every single day for 12 hours a day in a practice room, and that's their North Star, they want to be principal violinist in whatever symphony. They have no control over that end result. Right. Even if they are technically fantastic, even if they spend those 12 hours in the practice room every day, it could come down to them and another person who did the exact same thing and a person on the other side of the table that says, because you wore blue and the other person wore pink that day, they like pink better and they picked pink.
Right.
Mm.
It could completely come down to that. And there's so many versions of that in music, right? We used to have to, how do we get our music on the radio? Oh, we have to get to this radio DJ. Oh, how do we get our music played on TV? Oh, we have to get a record deal. All of these gatekeepers that used to exist. Now, one of the number one video distribution sites, everybody goes to it every day and watches a video, YouTube.com. Anybody can make a channel. Anybody can upload. It's a matter of like reaching those people, finding them, building up your own channel. Of course, you don't get the $100,000 advance from the label to start that up and to, you know, make
that
it
you
thing.
Then have to pay back
that you that you're in debt. Exactly. The good part about that is you're starting it on your own. You're not in debt. And you're building something up for yourself. So like that's the underpinning there is like completely bypassing gatekeepers, finding the people who like what I do and getting direct access to them. So yes, I have a YouTube channel, but I also have Instagram, and then I also have a Discord server, and then I also have channel members, you know, like, and then I also have a website. So like all of this, like multi-pillar approach where like, if one went down, one would still be standing, you know,
it
provides a little sense of security. But we started this chat by talking about how it's one of the best times to be alive as an artist, of course. And there are definitely more ways that artists can be exploited nowadays. However, there are more ways, I think, now for us to sidestep gatekeepers and craft our own vision for what our career will look like as artists. Because sustainability, it's not just about making money. It's not just about being able to pay your bills. It's about the people who want to consume your work. You owe it to them to be able to sustain your work. If you can't keep creating the thing that they love, ultimately, you're letting them down. And that's at whatever frequency you can do it, whatever level you're able to do it at. The people who want your work, you deserve to sustain your work so that you can provide it for them, right? Like if you think about it that way from a non-selfish perspective, there's people that want to consume your work, build a sustainable way so that you can keep creating and you don't just disappear off the face of the earth one day and their favorite artist is suddenly gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are we're coming up on our time here together that we've set aside, but I just want to ask you two more things.
Sure.
One, someone's listening to this right now. It's a young music creator, or you know, whatever age. They've just made their YouTube channel. They've decided that they're gonna, you know, try their hand at YouTube content creation. We've answered a lot of this question already, I'm sure, throughout this conversation. I'm pretty sure we have. But just with that premise and that setup, what's like the one piece of advice that you would give that person that you would want to impart on them as they embark on their content creation journey?
Put your head down and keep making stuff for a while. You're not going to look at your first video and be like, wow, you know, 100 people saw this, and then your next video is 50 people, and then if you give up after that, you're like, it wasn't a fruitful effort anyway. Like, you have to keep going regardless of what you think these little micro things are. Because now, if you can imagine, I can look at my channel analytics, and I can look at the past 5 years of data, and somewhere along the line, there's a dip. I'm certain of it. I'm not looking at the data, but there's a dip somewhere. If I had quit at that dip, I wouldn't be at the higher level that I'm at today, right? So you're going to have to just put your head down and keep going. Also, secondly, you have to be asking yourself, why would somebody watch this? Don't just make a video for the sake of making a video. Don't do the like simulacra of art thing where like, you know what a YouTube video is supposed to look like. So you make it like a YouTube video is supposed to look like, and you've just simulated a YouTube video. No, like, make something that somebody would want to watch for some reason, whether that's educational, whether that's entertaining, whatever it may be. But also, you could just be documenting your experience for now, learning the ways of doing all this stuff, and the practice you're getting from doing that is enough. So there's a determination for you to make there too. Are you just documenting your process currently, getting your feet on the ground, you know, figuring things out? Or are you actually trying to build an audience? And if you are trying to build that audience, you should be asking, why would anybody watch this? Why would people come back? You know, that kind of question.
Okay. And then the last thing, yes, you have your YouTube channel, you do your live streams. You also have a podcast called Creative Currents.
That's true. Yes, yes, yes. So I just finished season one. Since right now I'm like promoting the single that just dropped and the album that's going to come out next month, I've kind of completed season one, but they're very evergreen episodes. So if you are interested in more subjects like this, some of the stuff we talked about today, even like creative identity, creativity, check out Creative Currents podcast. There's 10 episodes waiting for you out there. And we'll be back with season two once the hecticness of this album release and everything finishes up.
And we'll put it in the show notes for you guys. Also, Where can people just keep up to date with what you're doing? Where can they get notified about your album when it comes out? All of that stuff.
For sure. Just keep up with me on all the social medias. Of course, I post videos a few times a month on YouTube. I'm also live every single week on YouTube. I'm on Threads and I'm on Instagram at Taetro, T-A-E-T-R-O on both those things. I'm always, you know, posting at random times about the things that I'm doing. But, you know, if you want to keep up with some of this stuff, you won't miss it if you're following me. That's what I'll say.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show, man. This has been a great conversation.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening. We hope you found that conversation inspiring. And thank you to Taetro for sharing his time and his thoughts with us. To keep up with Taetro, check out the show notes for links to his various platforms. His YouTube channel is full of helpful and uplifting content, and he has a fantastic and supportive community that are all sharing their music journey with each other. So if that's the kind of thing that you're into, I highly recommend that you check it out. If you like this conversation and you want to hear more like it, please don't forget to rate and review. Every bit of positive feedback helps this podcast get out to more music creators just like you. And it also just helps us know that we're doing a good job. Until next time, I'm Chris Hazel, and this is Orchestrated, a music podcast. I'll catch you on the next one.